I remember when I was in England, somebody called me to a house program in which there were many doctors. And most of them were Indian migrants who had come. And since they were all doctors, they asked me to speak on spirituality for the medical profession. And after the lecture was over, somehow or the other in the question and the answer, somebody said something about abortion, or somehow the topic came up, I don't remember how. And I expressed the point that we accept that abortion is a great crime, it's a great sin, it's a violent act. So one of the doctors suddenly spoke up and said, but if you don't do that, then the population of this world will grow wildly, uncontrolled. This was a doctor speaking. And then I asked him quietly, so if it is population that you want to control through abortion, then what if I kill you to control the population? Is it okay with you? If it's okay to kill a child within the womb to control the population, then why not kill you for controlling the population of the world? Isn't it? But of course, nowadays you can't speak like this. But I did anyway. Because truth has to be spoken. Whatever be the reasoning, whether there was a rape or whether there was whatever reason, what is the fault of the child that you must kill the child? Rape and other such instances, events that happen, are problems of grown-ups. It's because our society is so spoiled, because people's consciousness is so spoiled, because we have lost our God consciousness, so then people are doing all these things. But because somebody has done a crime against somebody else, why kill a third person? Do you get the point? What is the fault of the child that you must kill the child? Yes, the mother will experience a lot of inconvenience, there will be many problems. But then we have to give the social support, financial support, emotional support, whatever other support is there for the mother. But does it justify killing the child in the womb? When the child is very much a living personality who is growing? And the proof that it's human is that it grows into a full-fledged human. What if it is detected to have some kind of congenital defect, let's say mental retardation or some physical defect in the body, then should we kill? Can anyone give any argument? If somebody says, well, let's say somebody comes to you and says, well, my child has been, I'm 2 months pregnant or whatever, and the doctor says that there is a defect in the child. So when the child was delivered, it will have some mental defect, mentally retarded or physically handicapped or something. So then the doctor is recommending termination of pregnancy. So how will you advise? What argument will you give? Yes. Well, yes, then the question is that, yes, correct, we're on the right track. So suppose the child had been already born, and having been born, it was detected that he had or she had some abnormality. Would you kill the child after birth? What would you answer? No. If you won't kill the child after the child is just delivered, then why would you kill within the womb? Would you kill one day before birth? You wouldn't kill one day after birth. So will you kill one day before birth? No. Will you kill 2 days before birth? No. 3 days before birth? No. Keep going back, one day at a time. Then at which day will you say it is okay to kill and not kill? So you see the whole illogical thing that the modern civilization is caught up in? And so much cruelty is done to the innocent child in the womb. And it is a very heinous crime. You see, when there is a murder, then in any way it is a grave offense. But if you murder somebody who is helpless, like say an aged person who can't move or something like that, then the court will take an even stricter view and give a harsher punishment. Who can be more helpless than the child in the womb? Even an elderly person can do something, can at least press a bell, can call somebody on the phone, can something they can do. But what can a child in the womb do? So the child in the womb is the most helpless living entity in the human species. And killing a child in the womb, therefore, will be the most heinous crime. And because there's such a large number of such abortions happening in the world, in millions every year, therefore, with so much of sinful activity going on, the karmic reactions are awesome. They are terrible. Srila Prabhupada said, the two of the most grave sins that are causing catastrophic consequences today, which is causing people to get slaughtered and killed in battles and wars and natural calamities and so on, are abortion and killing of cows. These both generate very heavy sinful reactions. So the time in the womb is a difficult period, but that doesn't give us the right to take the decision to kill somebody else. And even if it is an unplanned, unwanted pregnancy, then we have to bear the responsibility for our actions. We cannot not go through the whole motion. We have to protect the interests of the child as well. And it is unfortunate that in these situations, all the human rights organizations, etc., they don't speak up so much. Maybe some do. But it is very important that we protect the sanctity of life. So the time in the womb is a very important period in terms of developing the consciousness of the individual. Therefore, after the Garbhadhana Samskar has been done, now, when the conception takes place, then the Garbha Samskar begins. Previously was Garbhadhana Samskar, and now will be the Garbha Samskar. Garbha Samskar means the impressions that are given to the child in the womb. So it is recommended in the scriptures that the mother especially, and naturally all the family members must cooperate, but especially the mother must be very, very Krishna conscious. She must absorb her mind in hearing and chanting about Krishna, in remembering Krishna, engage her body in Krishna conscious activities. She must regulate her diet. She must be in a very cheerful and positive mood. Members in the family must cooperate to see that she is not under tension. And as far as family issues are concerned, well, these things always happen. But even if the expectant mother commits a mistake, she should be considerately dealt with. Not that everybody will say, you made a mistake, and then scold her or something so that she loses her mental peace. There should be understanding so that at any cost, the expectant mother's consciousness will be pure and her mind will be calm and peaceful. In the house, there must be a very, very devotional atmosphere with kirtans going on, some lectures being played, and all sorts of fragrant substances being offered to the deity in the temple, at home. So the overall ambience must be so devotional that eventually the child within the womb will absorb this atmosphere. And this will make the child very, very strong in Krishna consciousness. And even later, if the child is exposed to bad influences, somehow or the other, even if the child gets distracted by these influences, the basic character of the child and the spiritual inclination will not be destroyed. So this is the very important period in which the child has to be exposed to spirituality in a very serious way. So the mother must every day read the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. And preferably she must recite the Sanskrit verses also. Because reciting such verses are very purifying. In addition to chanting of the holy names, of course, reciting of these verses from the Gita and the Bhagavatam will be very helpful. The Sanskrit language in and of itself is very purifying. And when it is verses from the scriptures, it's even more purifying. Furthermore, another benefit is that because Sanskrit is such a perfect language and the mother of all languages, the child will automatically develop a flair for picking up different types of languages. One doctor was telling me that a child has the capacity to learn 36 languages. Just imagine that. 36 languages, that is the brain capacity of a child. You expose a child just for a short time to a language, picks up the language. Just the other day, we were with one child, and his grandfather, our Satya Sempra, was saying, this child is using words like comprehensive, the age of 3. He's speaking words that even adults sometimes don't use. Comprehensive. Have you heard a 3-year-old child speaking comprehensive? So children can pick up very fast. So teaching them good languages, language skills is very important. One should be the mother tongue, and English, of course, they will learn anyway. But at least the child should learn 2 or 3 languages. And the beginning can be with Sanskrit in the womb. And there should be communication between the mother and the child. There are many people who do courses on this now. The communication has to be there, positive communication between the mother and also between the father and the child. And the child reciprocates. And in this way, the child emerges to be a very emotionally balanced and well-rounded child, psychologically very stable, and spiritually very strong, very inclined towards spiritual life. So chanting these verses, singing devotional songs, chanting the holy names, reading Bhagavatam, hearing lectures, and if the Garbhadhan Samskar is done properly, sincerely over a period of months preparing for the whole conception, and then during the womb, the period in the womb, if the mother especially and the other family members as well have focused on giving a very nice atmosphere to the child and good samskaras, rest assured, this child will never deviate from Krishna consciousness significantly. Maybe minor deviations may happen because of the atmosphere outside, but it will always come back. So this period in the womb is a very crucial period. This is the time where Prahlad became actually a staunch pure devotee, because he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam when he was in his mother's womb. When his father eventually left once more for performing austerities, and the kingdom was attacked by Indra, and Indra wanted to kill Kayadhu as well, but Narad Muni came and forbade her. He said, don't, because within the womb is a great devotee of Krishna. So then Indra circumambulated Kayadhu because the great devotee was within her womb. And then he left. Meanwhile, Narad Muni gave Kayadhu shelter in his ashram. And she stayed there. And he spoke Bhagavatam to her. The Bhagavatam was intended for the child, but it was spoken to the mother. As time went on, the mother forgot, because she was an adult. And the child remembered, because the power of absorption for the child in the womb is very strong. It's like a sponge. Picks up all these things. So if the child in the womb is exposed to quarrels in the house, and there's fighting, argumentation, people speaking in loud voices, or harsh language, and so on and so forth, or any sort of negativity is picked up by the child in the womb. In a subconscious way, it affects the mentality and the consciousness of the child. So Prahlad Maharaj became a pure devotee, and Srila Prabhupada gives examples of how great devotees practice Krishna consciousness at every stage in life, starting with the womb. And he gives the examples of Prahlad Maharaj and also of Parikshit Maharaj. When Parikshit was a small child in the womb of his mother Uttara, and the Brahmastra was released by Ashwatthama to kill the last descendant of the Pandavas, Uttara came running to Krishna. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Krishna actually expanded himself. He entered into the womb of Uttara, and in his four-armed form, he was circling the fetus. And the child, who later became known as Parikshit, was observing this transcendental, beautiful figure who was moving round and round very fast. With great fascination, he was looking, gazing at this figure. And because after he was born, he never could forget that sight. So he was all the time looking for that personality who he saw in the womb. And because he was thinking like that, he was called Parikshit, one who was always looking, examining. So therefore, here are examples of children in the womb who have done devotional service. So there is never any obstacle for people who say this is too early. Especially in Indian families, this is very common. The moment you start devotional service, you'll have any number of family members or relatives coming and telling you it's too early to do devotional service. So even if a 60-year-old person does that, they say the same thing. So it's too early. It's not too early. And then we should tell them examples of Prahlad and Parikshit who started devotional service in the womb. And then of course there is birth. Birth is a very, very painful experience. We all have mercifully forgotten it. For the mother it's painful, for the child it's painful. Only the others are happy and waiting for the birth. And therefore the whole process is called labor pain, not labor pleasure. Because it's painful. So Krishna has created this world in such a way that there is pain at every step. The process of birth is one of the four fundamental pains or distresses in life. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that knowledge begins with understanding that this material world has these four types of sufferings: birth, death, old age and disease. And at the time of birth, first of all, one comes from one situation inside the womb. All of a sudden we come to the outside world, we expose to the open atmosphere. It is very traumatic. And this is also one of the reasons why we forget what happened in the womb and even the life before that. So death is traumatic, it makes us forget. And then birth is also traumatic, so it makes us forget. And therefore we are not able to remember what happened in the mother's womb. So after birth, when the child is delivered, then also there are many samskars to be done. And those sanskars, of course, there are two aspects to it. One is a ritualistic aspect. Ritualistic aspect meaning that there are ceremonies to be performed and so on, which is good and which must be done. However, the most important thing is the consciousness with which these sanskaras are done. It is the devotional content of those ceremonies that is actually going to make a difference to the spiritual development of the child and to the character of the child. So Vedic culture was very, very evolved. It considered the development of the human being at every stage. Preconception, within the womb at different stages, there are some sanskaras to be done. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, at every stage certain things have to be done. Then after birth also there are so many sanskaras to be done. It's serious business. And then as a child grows, yes, the child is exposed to so many different influences. In the beginning, the child is only aware of the family, the mother, the father, and so on. The child doesn't have any consciousness beyond that. But gradually, as the child's intelligence grows, his or her consciousness grows beyond mother, beyond father, and starts looking beyond. So in the phase of childhood also, this is again another period where the sanskars are very important. Sometimes devotees may get a little disheartened and say, well, you know, we did not do our garbhadhan sanskar, so then what will happen to our child? Is it a lost case then? Of course not. Some people will say, what to speak of garbhadhan sanskar? We could not even do anything special within the womb when the child was in the womb. Then is it a lost case? No. At least when the child is born, when the child is very, very young, that is a time we can give a lot of sanskars to the child. And unfortunately today in many places what happens is the child is exposed to many influences like television or material music or fighting or wrangling in the house, various other types of inputs. So at least in the house, the atmosphere must be maintained in a very devotional way. And the behavior of the elders must be exemplary. Because the children will detect it at a subtle level. And when they grow up enough to be able to understand it, it will make a serious impact in their character and their consciousness and attitudes. So it is very important that adults should not act in a way that will spoil the consciousness of the child, will set a wrong example for the child. When I was coming here, I saw an advertising board by the traffic department of Australia. It says, what kind of driver are you raising? Have you seen that? And there's one in one of those boards, there is a picture of the man who's driving. And he's very angry and he's shouting at somebody in a case of road rage. And the child is sitting behind in the child seat and is watching everything. And so the Australian Traffic Authority says that, what kind of driver are you raising? Meaning that whatever way you are driving, then he's going to see that. And he's going to think that's the way it's supposed to be done. I remember a little joke. One time one lady was driving and her little child was with her and the child asked, so mommy, where are those idiots? Mommy says, see, they're only there when your father drives. So when the father drives and he loses his cool and he shouts at everybody. So setting the example is very, very important. That is how children learn more than anything else. And we discussed a bit of this in that Grihastha seminar 2 years ago, if I remember right. And in this phase of childhood also, a tender stage, if good samskars are given, if the child is exposed to happy Krishna consciousness and also character building, values are given to the child, even basic things, then the individual will turn out to be very well-rounded in the future. So if Prahlad Maharaj and Parikshit Maharaj are examples of great devotees who perform devotional service within the womb, who are the examples of people in childhood who became great devotees? Dhruva Maharaj is one example. And by the way, when we talk of the womb, Who can forget the example of Shukadev Maharaj? He was in the womb and didn't want to come out of the mother's womb because he felt, I'll come into Maya. And his father says, come on, this is not done. You have to come out of your mother's womb. It's been a long time. And even when the time came for the delivery birth, he didn't want to go out. He stayed inside. And years passed. 12 years passed. In some cases it is mentioned 16 years. That was of course in Dwapar Yuga, but nevertheless. So he remained inside for 12 to 16 years. And Vyasadev also could not convince him to come out. And only when Vyasadev requested Krishna, then Krishna convinced him. He said, come out, I assure you, you will not fall in Maya. Then he came out. And as soon as he came out, he walked off to become a brahmachari. I don't know which ISKCON temple was nearby over there, but something must have been there. He went to join the ashram. As soon as he was born and Vyasadeva was behind him, my son, where are you going? So even within the womb, the child has a spiritual consciousness. And in childhood, that continues. So these experiences are very strong. Many of the major issues today that people have may be also because of childhood experiences. Sometimes they're because of previous life experiences that continue on, and some because of childhood experiences. Somebody had a bad experience in school, was bullied in school, was abused in school. You know, so many things happen. So this is a very tender age, and complete protection, physical, mental, emotional, intellectual, and above all spiritual protection is necessary. Dhruva Maharaj was only 5 years old when he saw the Lord. Even Prahlad Maharaj was only 5 years old when he saw the Lord. But there are others who demonstrate completely opposite traits. Shishupal, for example. It is said about Shishupal, who was actually like a cousin of Krishna, was a relative of Krishna. From the moment he could speak even a few words, he was always speaking ill about Krishna. You see, Shishupal was born very strange. He was born with 4 hands and 3 eyes. And he was braying like a donkey. Normally children cry like humans cry, like human babies cry, but he was braying like a donkey. So the parents got very, very scared and they were going to throw the baby off somewhere. And then an astrologer said, no, no, don't do that, because this child is going to become a very powerful, strong personality. Will become a king, actually. After you, they'll become a very strong king. So then the parents said, but what can we do? 4 hands and 3 eyes and braying like a donkey? It's not acceptable. He said, no, extra arms will come off, the third eye will also fall off. So how? When the person who is going to kill him will hold him in his arms, the 2 extra arms will fall off. And when this child sees his to-be killer, then the third eye automatically will fall off also. So the king became very anxious and he called everybody. All the kings, somehow on some pretext or the other, he started calling them. And the third eye remained, the 2 extra arms remained. One day Krishna came there, because he was known to the family. And as soon as Shishupal saw Krishna, his third eye fell off. And then the king, that is Shishupal's father, placed the child in the arms, in the lap of Krishna. And immediately his 2 extra arms fell off. And then Shishupal's mother prayed to Krishna, please don't kill my child. And Krishna said, okay, you're asking me, so I'll try to do something, but I cannot fully keep it. I can do one thing. I'll wait till he abuses me 100 times. then I will kill him. But I will not kill him till he reaches abuse number 100.